Welcome to the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. We feature hot topics and novel perspectives, always with relevance to the dental career and practice. Join our hosts, Anina and Elena, as they speak with new guests from around the world each month and learn more about what's important for the next generation in oral regeneration.
Welcome back to a new episode of our podcast. Today, we have named our podcast Coffee with the Editor. As we have imagined, this conversation takes place in front of a cup of coffee in a nice bar where we would enjoy discussing with our guests the work behind the scenes of a scientific journal. Right, Elena?
Yes, Anina, this is exactly the atmosphere we have figured in our mind for this podcast. And we are really thrilled to have with us a very good friend of ours and of the Osteology Foundation, Gustavo Avila Ortiz. Gustavo holds important academic and clinical appointments as he is visiting professor in the Department of Oral Medicine, Infection and Immunity at Harvard School of Dental Medicine, as well as collaborating faculty in the Department of Periodontology at Complutense University of Madrid. But he is also a member of Atelier Dental Madrid, a center for dental excellence in Madrid, in Spain. However, this is not the reason we invited him today as our guest, but today Gustavo is here because of his role as editor-in-chief of the International Journal of Periodontics and Restorative Dentistry, and also because of his previous experiences as associate editors of other important journals. So welcome, Gustavo. It's really great to have you with us today.
Likewise. Thank you, Anina. Thank you, Elena, for the kind introduction. I have to say before we start that I have listened to all the podcasts that you've done before. I am a big podcast consumer, so it's very exciting for me to be part of this now.
Yeah, thank you very much that you are here. And also a warm welcome from my side. Gustavo, we would like to take the opportunity to highlight your work behind the scenes as an editor-in-chief. So I would say this is extremely interesting for the readers of any scientific journals and also for anyone aspiring to publish in a scientific journal. So first of all, how did you start your journey as an editor? I really want to know that.
Sure. I can give you some background. I was participating back in 2018 in the ITI consensus in Amsterdam. And through that experience, I met new people. And one of them was Asbjørn Jokstad, who at the time was the editor-in-chief of Clinical and Experimental Dental Research. So we congeniated and we talked a lot during those days, and he was looking for an associate editor with an expertise in periodontics and implant dentistry and also clinical research. So he invited me to be part of it, and I was happy to accept. So I was in that role for about 2 years until the opportunity came from Journal of Periodontology and Clinical Advances in Periodontics to join the editorial board as an associate editor. It was Kenneth Corman.
Okay.
Gave me that opportunity. So I transitioned from CEDR to JPerio and CAP. And as of now, we are transitioning. I'm still officially an associate editor of JPerio, but until the end of the year. And since early 2023, in January, I took over along with my colleague Oscar Gonzalez Martin as the new editors in chief of the International Journal of Periodontics and Restorative Dentistry.
Okay,
very interesting. It must be a lot of work, I can imagine.
I've learned a lot. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, and you know, Gustavo, I'm curious to know a little bit more about the journey of a submitted article, because, you know, sometimes we all get frustrated because we wait months to get a feedback about an article. So I think it will be extremely interesting and helpful to better understand the whole process. So from the moment we press, let's say, the submit button until the moment we finally see our work published. So how does it work? What is the work behind the scene when you receive an article?
So first, we have to say that every publisher and every journal, they may have different processes depending on their scope and what their interests are, and also the capacity to handle submissions. But in general, once an author clicks the button and it goes to the internet, there's usually a staff member that works for the publisher, whether it's Wiley, Quintessence, Elsevier, Springer, and that person reviews the submission. And once it is verified that it meets the guidelines for publication, the submission hits the dashboard of an editor. It could be the editor in chief that assigns that submission to a specific associate editor or keeps the submission for him or herself. Or it could be that this staff person, based on instructions and guidelines that he or she follows, assigns the paper to an associate editor. Then you usually get an alert in your email address, the primary email address that is associated with your account. And then you can go in and review the information that was submitted. So then, and we can talk about, you know, the thought process, but the first big thing is to decide whether you're triaging that paper and not proceeding with assigning it to reviewers, or you assign it to reviewers. If the answer is yes, we're going to move forward. Then the job, and one of the hardest parts of an editor, is to find good reviewers that have an expertise on that topic, that you know they're going to do a good job, that they don't have any biases, at least that you are aware of. And once that assignment is made, the reviewer has to accept, which, you know, you hope that that is a positive response. I usually go with at least three reviewers, and we can discuss the reasons for later on if you're interested. It may be more than that, depending on the topic. There may be some papers that you require somebody that knows about statistics or bioinformatics, and then you look for an extra person to look at that paper. Every journal, as I said, has a different process. Usually reviewers are given between 3 and 4 weeks in most journals in dentistry to reply and to provide their feedback. And once all the reviews have been received, it is the job of the editor to make a decision. And that decision can be rejection, it could be acceptance, or it could be additional modifications are required. In my experience, it's very rare that an article is accepted straight away after, always reviewers have feedback.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah,
is
it's very
there
rare.
The case? I mean, in my case, it was never the case. So,
yes, no, you're not alone on that. That doesn't mean that you're a bad researcher or a bad writer. It's the opposite. It's the usual is that you at least you get some minor modifications to be made to your paper. But most often than not, it's major revisions, right?
No.
So,
yeah, I mean, now some. Sorry, just to interrupt you, because now something crossed my mind, and because when we were talking or discussing about doing this podcast, you mentioned something very interesting, that you are kind of a gatekeeper of the journal, and I think you just described that. So in that sense, your responsibility is really to be aware of the time, let's say, so it comes like in time, the feedback, and also to select adequate reviewers. So, and you already wanted to mention that. So maybe we can stick to that. Like, how important is this peer review and the selection of the reviews?
No, you mentioned a key element in this process is that you have to be respectful with your colleagues and very mindful about how important it is for them to find out whether it is at the first stage. If an article is triaged, they want to know as soon as possible to resubmit to another journal, or if feedback is provided to adjust the paper and then send it again to the same journal or elsewhere. And the same applies when you receive feedback from reviewers as an editor and you send that feedback to the authors. So how important is the peer review process? It's critical, it's crucial, because if obviously everything that we received didn't go through a process in which experts provide their feedback, the spirit of science would be diminished. We want to be fair in that regard, in terms of having different eyes looking at the same paper, and hopefully with no biases and a high degree of expertise. So gatekeeper is a word. You can also say steward of, you know, the content that is published in science. And I think everybody who has this responsibility genuinely has an interest in furthering the field, in advancing science, and hopefully publishing content that would be translated into helping patients receiving better care and optimizing future research projects to gather valuable information. So we thought the peer review process, that whole sequence is compromised. In its core. So it's really, really very important.
Yeah, and I do have a following question on that. Because how do you make sure then that the quality of the reviews is timely and always at the high level? I mean, do you have like tips and tricks somehow, or how does that work?
I don't know if you can ever make sure, because you're working with other people that have their own lives and responsibilities. And there are some reviewers that are very, very reliable. And those are the people that you tend to want to work with. And there are people that are very good usually, but something comes up like a grant deadline or personal matters, and they request an extension. So it's really your judgment as to whether it is worth it and is reasonable, or maybe you say, hey, thank you for accepting initially, but I'm going to look for somebody else that can hopefully speed up the whole process. So you can never make sure, but as an editor, as I said before, you really have to be, I think, something important for me, on top of things, always keeping in mind that the authors, they want to find out, they want to be treated respectfully and fairly. And I think that's super important. I pay a lot of attention to that personally.
Yeah, and also it goes with the reputation of the journal as well, obviously. So I understand your concerns as an editor, that you want everything to work perfectly. And what do you think about the blindness of reviewers? Because, you know, there are different opinions, different pros and cons about having a totally blind review, or instead letting the peer reviewers know in advance who is trying to publish that specific article.
Yes, that's a great question, Elena. There are different ways of doing this. And this goes back to, as we were talking about, the sequence of the what the paper goes through in this whole editorial process, to when the reviewers receive an invitation, it can be either that they know who they are reviewing, the authors of that paper, or not, right? And that is one level of blinding or masking. The other level is whether the authors know who is reviewing them, right? Typically, in most journals, the authors do not know who they are reviewing, who is reviewing, sorry, their paper, their submission. But in many other journals, the reviewers, they know who are the authors of the paper that they are reviewing. That can be positive in an ideal world. If I receive, for example, an invitation to review a paper from a friend of mine or a mentor of mine, you would have to acknowledge that even though if you try to be super objective, there may be some degree of bias in your assessment. And maybe it would be advisable that you inform the editor and say, hey, I recuse myself. Please look for somebody else. I'm talking about an ideal world, and
yeah.
I don't know if that always happens. I hope it does, right? Personally, I prefer either double blinding, in which neither the authors or the reviewers know who each other are, or a completely open process, which is not very typical in dentistry. I don't know any major journal in dentistry in our field that does that, but is very common in other type of journals, like basic science journals or outside of dentistry, right? So that, I think, could be very healthy as well. There are even journals that they publish the documents that describe the review process.
Yeah,
and that can really help the community. Obviously, there are concerns, particularly when you're talking about clinical research, some confidentiality and intellectual property issues may arise from that, but it is certainly something that it could be beneficial from different points of view.
Yeah, it would also be interesting sometimes to see, because you know, you get it back, your manuscript, you have to adapt, you implement certain thing which is required by the reviewers. And this kind of thing is sometimes interesting to read afterwards. Also to see what aspects were discussed during this process. What was
exactly. I call
the
it
highlights?
The metaphysics of an article, because the typical article, you get your PDF. Now we receive more opportunities to have supplementary content, right? As an author, many journals, you know that you can publish videos, which is something that was not possible years ago. You could also publish tables that may not fit because of their extension in the actual main PDF of the article. And that's great. But there are other aspects that pertain to a study itself or the process of review that may be hidden. And if they would be published, it could be very helpful for the advancement of our field. So,
yeah, great.
I mean, yes, I think very interesting aspect. Maybe we will see that in the future. You never know.
It's possible.
So, I'm switching a bit the direction. So, because your journal is the official journal of the Academy of Oslo Integration. And I was wondering, how important is it for a journal to develop this kind of collaboration with the scientific society?
Yes, I think it's a mutual benefit. It's, it's good for the society because it would have, on the one hand, something else to offer their membership, right?
Yeah.
And also a platform to publish content that would be relevant or priority for that society, such as clinical guidelines, consensus statements, something that they want to communicate that affects the membership of the journal that they would want to complement aside from social media or other channels of communication. I think that it also provides prestige to an organization to have an official indexed and hopefully with an impact factor journal. I think that's positive from the side of in the organization. From the side of the journal, it's also positive because it would provide opportunities for the authors to be engaged and to be read by a larger community beyond, you know, institutional subscriptions or individual subscriptions. So it's a road that goes both ways, and I think it's good for both, for the institution, for the journal, and for the publisher, because there are honestly some aspects that are related to financial sustainability of the journal that can be offset if you have an agreement with an organization, right?
Yeah, and it can increase the visibility as well, as you said, increase the audience, widen it a little bit. Well, that's interesting. And, you know, Gustavo, looking into the future, let's say, and how do you think journals are changing and evolving? Because I see, and you mentioned that partially before, that there are now new features. So now it's possible to have like videos integrated with the article or podcasts like our, for instance. You can have interviews. So it's going beyond the traditional structure of articles like they used to be in the past. So what is your vision, let's say, for the next 10 years? How do you foresee these changing in the future?
That's a great question. And when I look back, and when I was a dental student and even a PhD student, there was very little digital support for journals. I remember I had to go to the library, find the volume, go to the copy machine. I had a stack of papers over my desk when I was writing my thesis that my mom was yelling at me because it was all like, you know, occupying the space for the table. Now you can put all those papers in your iPhone, in your iPad, in your laptop. And that's a big advancement. And what I foresee is that we're gonna see more digital content complementing the traditional text and images that are, you know, the core of a paper. You said that there are journals that have podcasts. They invite authors to explain what they did or talk about challenges that they encountered or anything that they would like to share that goes beyond what can be read in the official material that is published online or in the print version of the journal. Videos as well. Mini webinars. This is something that some journals outside of dentistry have seen they do. With authors, they invite them to give a mini presentation, 10-minute overview with slides of what they did in the research and the take-home messages from that investigation. Interviews, point, counterpoint. I think that that's going to continue to enrich the material that has been traditionally published on a paper down the road. With the advent of artificial intelligence, I don't know if you've heard about these apps that you can drop the PDF in the app and they read it back to you. So you can be walking on the street and you can be listening to, and you can even select whether you want to listen to the intro, the results section, or just the conclusions and program them. So for example, I have these 20 papers and I want to listen to the conclusions of all these papers as I go from point A to point B in my car or walking in the street or whatever. So there's really a whole lot of different opportunities and possibilities that can enrich, as I said, the typical article that has been published for many years. And I'm very excited to see how that evolves.
Are you thinking to go in that direction with your journal as well?
Yeah, I have to say yes.
Okay.
We're working with Quintessence and yeah, I don't want to give too much away because obviously, you know, we have to play our cards.
Of course.
But yeah, we're working on some of that content. It takes time. There's a lot of background work with the staff at the editorial office and thinking ways that would be friendly for authors. You don't want to make things too hard for them. Right?
I think sometimes it's difficult also to find something new that someone else is not already doing, because there are so many offers nowadays and everyone is doing everything. So we're looking forward to see what you're gonna come up with.
You know, Picasso, my fellow Spaniard, said back in the day that the best artist is not the one that creates, but the one that knows what to steal. So you don't always have to be original. I'm not saying you want to be original, you want to be innovative, but as you said, there's so much other people have been doing there. So why not, like a mixer in a cocktail bar, you take different ingredients and you come up with your own version of what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the direction we are going to, because I also think the newer technology allows us also to have a different view. I mean, when we talk about, let's say, surgical procedures, I mean, I like to see the video and not only the picture. So yes, I'm very excited what comes next. And I think the coffee was great, what we had. Now we go to the cocktails. So now, Gustavo, thank you very much that you were here. It was really nice talking to you. Had
pleasure.
Our virtual coffee.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you also from my side. I really enjoyed learning from you. What is it to be an editor-in-chief? And I'm sure we also gave very useful information to all the listeners and to all the potential contributors of scientific literature. So thank you so much for being with us today.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, and good luck down the road. I love your podcast.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.